easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right?
So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
You think about the damage done by suppressing these types of information. It can affect presidential elections, it can affect control of the Senate, and health issues that could save the lives of millions of people. It is extremely dangerous, a huge threat to the Republic, and people need to stop against this war on freedom of information.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Molly Hemingway, our first guest on today's program. Molly is Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, a Fox News contributor, and author of the recent book, Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and the Democrats Seized Our Elections. We talk at length with Molly about the media, about elections, redistricting, and more. Molly, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Great to be here with you.
I have to ask about the new title over at The Federalist, where you're the new editor-in-chief. So tell us how you intend to sort of change things, shake things up, and make it all... Tell us what your new role entails at The Federalist.
Yeah, well, we started The Federalist in 2013, and I had been senior editor there. But more of the same of what we've been doing at The Federalist in my new role as editor-in-chief. We just think it's very important that we fight every day against the false media narratives that you read about and see on corporate media. And it's important to do that. So we'll be doing more of that.
Speaking of false media narratives, I wanted to start our conversation by asking about CNN and essentially saying, what the heck is happening over there between Chris Cuomo being fired and now looking for millions of dollars from the network, Jeff Zucker resigning / being fired from his position over at CNN. Ratings are down 80% or so from their heights during the Trump years. What the heck is happening over at CNN?
Well, it's really interesting to think about what happened to CNN over the last 10 years. They went from being a somewhat credible news network that people thought reported the news at least somewhat accurately into being the joke of the media establishment. And yet at the same time, they have been very important for pushing false narratives, whether it was about Justice Kavanaugh being a serial gang rapist or Donald Trump colluding with Russia to steal the 2016 election, which they ran with that story that the 2016 election was stolen every day for years. And they serve an important purpose for the left and the political regime, even though they don't have that many viewers. And a big key component of that was Jeff Zucker, the guy who ran CNN. And so it's been really disrupting to the staff there. They seem to be very upset that this guy has been pushed out, even though nobody denies that he was having an affair with one of his staffers and that, you know, had not disclosed it properly. That's the reason that was given. But they seem to be a bit rudderless right now. It's very interesting to watch from afar.
Molly, Joe Rogan is no one's idea of a conservative, necessarily, but he is being treated like a conservative by the mainstream media because he is popular, and by and large, they are not. What is the focus? Why is there this focus on Joe Rogan and his podcast and things he says, not constantly, not every day, but occasionally on his show?
Joe Rogan is a huge threat to the establishment because he doesn't allow himself to be forced to say what they say you have to say. And it's about any number of things, whether it's the COVID pandemic or critical race theory or any of the other things that dominate our media landscape. They want to constrain what you're allowed to say into a very narrow area, and he declines to do that. And he's extremely open-minded in terms of what type of people he brings on as guests. He asks them questions, and he doesn't participate in their censorship regime. And so they are doing everything they can to destroy him. And so first, they went with this belief that he was engaged in misinformation by talking to people who didn't accept, you know, get, like what CNN says you have to say about the COVID pandemic. And then it changed into like a hit that he was racist because he had talked, you know, openly about race. I don't think there's actually any substance to the claim that he's racist, but they're just going to keep going after him until they destroy him. He's definitely their number one target.
It's odd that if you would describe his show in one way, I would say perhaps it's curious. He has people on and he actually wants to know what they think and how they think and why they think differently. And he gives his guests time to respond. This is not a show in which Joe Rogan talks for 75 uninterrupted minutes. It's a podcast. It's a show in which he asks people, interesting people, questions and actually listens to their answers. And I think we've talked about this previously on this show here. The utter lack of curiosity among many reporters in the mainstream media is stark. And it is a big difference to see how curious Joe Rogan is about topics in the news. And I don't know if that's threatening to them, or they
hugely
see something that they used to be and don't want to be anymore.
Because exactly, it curates curiosity too. When he does this, when he shows how you can interact with people who you may not necessarily agree with, that influences how other people interact in their daily affairs. And we have a media environment that wants you to destroy people who you disagree with if they don't match, again, what the establishment or the regime thinks that you're allowed to say.
Molly Hemingway with us, senior journalism fellow here at Hillsdale, editor-in-chief at The Federalist, also author of the recent book Rigged, How the Media, Big Tech, and Democrats Seized Our Elections. In the past month or so, the Democrats' big push in Washington in the Senate for the People Bill, or the John Lewis Bill, has fallen flat because the filibuster cannot be overcome in their parlance. How do you think that this issue moves forward? Will they try again sometime before the end of the year and the midterms?
Well, it's definitely not over until it's over, and so I would not be surprised to see them keep pushing it. But there's a bigger issue in play here, too, which is, after the 2020 election, which we all experienced and we all know was unlike any election we ever saw, it was a really important issue for Republicans that election integrity and election security be tightened up. They knew that flooding the zone with tens of millions of mail-in ballots without appropriate oversight was a disaster. And what Democrats did that was very effective is that they just stole that issue and made it so that Republicans couldn't make as much advance on that as, well, Republicans also helped by not fighting these issues, but they acted like the opposite was the case, that any attempt to have a secure election was Jim Crow 2.0, as President Biden said. And so even things that were extremely popular, like having voter ID associated mm-hmm. with a ballot, something that 80% of the country supports, was treated as if it was like a racist vote oppression scheme. And by controlling that narrative and having a compliant media that helps push that false narrative, they've been able to keep Republicans from strengthening election security as much as they need to if they want to win free and fair elections.
The redistricting cycle is coming to an end, coming to a close. There are a few states out there that don't have their maps finalized yet. Your friend, your buddy, your pal, Mark Elias, who plays a big role in Rigged, people can read and find the things he was involved with back around 2016, and 2020, and since then as well. He's on Twitter threatening to sue everybody and anybody for everything in these states that are redrawing maps that he thinks will benefit Republicans. What's he up to?
Well, first of all, Mark Elias is much better at PR than he is at lawyering, so he's just very good at acting like he's doing a lot when he's not. But the situation is that pretty much every break went Democrats' way when it came to this partisan gerrymandering. They controlled enough legislatures. Then if they didn't control the legislatures, they controlled the state Supreme Courts. A lot of state Supreme Courts are elected in a partisan manner. And because of bad election years in recent years, many of these states that are key are overwhelmingly Democrat on their state Supreme Court. And they don't seem to care very much that some of these districts are, you know, cartoonishly absurd in terms of doing whatever it takes to have it be the best advantage for Democrats. So even though it's a year when Republicans are doing extremely well in the generic ballot, meaning that just you ask someone who they're going to vote for and without anything else knowing, they say they want to vote Republican, and people are expecting Republicans to take the House, this gerrymandering went so well for Democrats that they actually have a good shot here, too.
Molly, let's pause right there. We'll pick it up more discussion about elections and redistricting in just a moment. Molly Hemingway with us here on the program. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the program. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu and enter your email address, radiohour.hillsdale.edu. You can also find older episodes of the program there as well. We've been talking with Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow here at Hillsdale College, also editor-in-chief at The Federalist and Fox News contributor. Her most recent book is Rigged. Molly, we were talking about redistricting before the break. There are outlets who are now looking at the projected lean of these new seats and all very surprised that Democrats are actually doing okay. And you'll notice, as you tweet often, if you look very carefully, you can see them treating Democrats and Republicans slightly differently, whereas Republicans are awful gerrymandering, horrible people. Democrats are merely reaping the results of redistricting. The results of redistricting benefit Democrats while Republicans gerrymander.
Yeah.
But if you look at Illinois, New York, these are extreme partisan gerrymanders meant to punish opponents, Republicans, into having the fewest seats possible. You simply don't see that even in some of the more Republican states, some of the more red states that had the opportunity to do this. They sort of pulled back and said, maybe we won't do it quite so badly. And the coverage doesn't represent any of that.
It shows the power of corporate media in controlling discourse. But it's also true that there's just an element of politics in play here,
right,
and that it would probably be wise for Republicans to wake up and realize that. So, yes, Democrats sound completely hypocritical when Republicans were controlling state legislatures and state Supreme Courts and they could redistrict as they wanted. They would say, you're racist, you're evil, you're horrible, you're disenfranchising voters. And then when they took control, they did it so much worse than Republicans did. But why don't Republicans just realize that in politics, power is to be used and they should just be fearful? They should be less fearful of media coverage. And by contrast, they should fight harder against some of these unfair redistricting.
This is a cycle in which we've had a number of states implement and employ these quote-unquote nonpartisan redistricting committees. Michigan is one of the states where Hillsdale, of course, is located. Other states have had these in place now for the first time in 2022. Looking at some of the results, do you think that the momentum toward acceptance and states implementing these committees will continue, or are people going to look at these results and say, maybe that's not a great idea either?
I think the problem is that they were described as nonpartisan when they weren't. I mean, my husband was telling me something about a New Jersey redistricting scheme that involved one of the most partisan pollster guys out there, had a reputation for being really bad at number crunching, and he was the one who was like solely responsible for redistricting New Jersey, and that was called nonpartisan, and it wasn't by any stretch of the imagination.
Molly Hemingway with us, Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, Fox News contributor, at MZ Hemingway on Twitter, where if you look hard enough, you might find a few things labeled misinformation. I've come up with a phrase, yesterday's misinformation is tomorrow's conventional wisdom. We don't have to look much farther than, of course, the fight over COVID and masking to see how in the span of quite literally 2 or 3 days, things that were deemed misinformation then become accepted by Democratic governors, Democrats writ large, talking heads to become the conventional wisdom. This is dangerous when places like Facebook and other outlets are saying we can't have misinformation. But of course, who gets to define it? What is it? And what is done about it are the questions that are difficult to answer. And we see how the wisdom changes in real time. This is incredibly problematic.
Yeah. Misinformation is a weapon utilized by the regime, meaning claims of misinformation. In a free country, people should be free to say what they believe, fight against things that they believe to be false. And we have a censorship regime where we have one political party and the tech companies that control our discourse colluding together to suppress information that is harmful to the regime. And it could be political, like when they suppressed the real news story about the Biden family business and Hunter Biden's role in the Biden family business, working with foreign oligarchs in exchange for goods they get from the Biden family. It could be related to the COVID pandemic, where we were told that you weren't allowed to talk about the likelihood that the virus had leaked or come out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology until such time as it did become allowed. And you think about the damage done by suppressing these types of information. It can affect presidential elections. It can affect control of the Senate. It can affect, you know, vaccine development and health issues that could save the lives of millions of people. And so it is extremely dangerous, a huge threat to the Republic, and people need to stop against this war on freedom of information.
Connected into this world of misinformation is the increased trust, the increased reliance on fact checkers, be it from factcheck.org or CNN's official fact checker or whomever it might be. And people read these, and your husband, Mark Hemingway, has done great work on this. I've talked to him about it a few times over the years about how, well, unfactual these fact checks end up being, or at least they reach conclusions that are not supported by the facts they have simply laid out. Most recently, there was a fact check about whether or not the Biden administration was going to hand out crack pipes, you know, in this drug kit. And the fact checker said, well, yes, but they're also going to hand out 19 other things, so the claim that they're handing out the crack pipes is mostly false, which makes no sense. And you'd sort of laugh about it, but these fact checkers now have been empowered by places like Facebook and other places that are hosting news to decide what is or is not acceptable to post.
And people need to understand, if a quote-unquote fact check, which isn't a fact check at all, if it determines that someone said something false, it basically destroys not just that story. It keeps that story from being shared on social media platforms. It cuts something like 80% or more of the global traffic to that article. But it also becomes part of an algorithm to deplatform the media outlet or the reporter who did that. So when they are labeling falsely factual things as unfactual, it doesn't just affect that particular story, but everything done by the credible media outlets that are pushing against, again, the establishment narrative.
And we go back to a little about the Joe Rogan conversation we had. Joe Rogan's curious about things and tries to find out what he can from his guests. And I think that's one of the main things that people see is mainstream media outlets like Facebook saying these are all the things you can't talk about, we think are not true, and other outlets like perhaps The Federalist or Joe Rogan say, well, here is what we know and what we can find out, and maybe you guys can decide for yourself after reading this information what you think about it. There are big differences as to how outlets want to treat their consumers, their readers, their listeners.
Exactly. And a confident media outlet is able to host debates, is able to respond to challenges to the information that they provide. And people who aren't confident in their control of discourse try to suppress that information.
Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow at Hillsdale College, Editor-in-Chief, new Editor-in-Chief at The Federalist, also Fox News contributor. You can still pick up her recent book, Rigged: How the Media, Big Tech, and Democrats Seized Our Elections, and follow her on Twitter at MZ Hemingway. Molly, thank you so much for joining us here again on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, we talk with Stephen Mosier. His recent book, Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. It's now available in paperback with a new foreword. We'll talk about that next. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Country music fans, come see up-and-coming country musician Mitchell Tenpenny perform live in concert Friday, April 1st, inside the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center.
I've been sober. Yeah, this town's been telling me.
Tickets just $50 plus fee.
For tickets, call 1-800-280-UIN.
A must-see.
Country sensation Mitchell Tenpenny in concert at Wind River Resort and Casino Friday, April 1st.
Find your moment at the river.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. With all the talk about gun control and stripping firearms rights from law-abiding citizens, I just want you to remember that our country was founded on the idea that we would each be accountable to ourselves and each other for the safety of our society. Another important responsibility we have is the safe and effective use of a firearm. If that is your choice, give NFI a call at 999-1822 or find and register for one of our popular CCW courses at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Hey friends, this is RC with Tobacco and Brew. Today we're talking about the Fugly from Tabacalera El Artista. Coming in a 5x40 Vitola, the Fugly is priced just right for our value-conscious customers. Draped in a chocolatey brown San Andres leaf, presented in natural or Maduro, this stick is a throwback to a cheroot vintage. The Fugly from Tabacalera El Artista, Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage is now open at their new location at 1773 Highway 273 in Anderson, featuring new and existing vendors. Their grand opening is Saturday, February 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., with free drawings throughout the day. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage, now open at 1773 Highway 273 in Anderson. Don't miss their grand opening, February 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., in the Shasta Gateway Center.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere, Ag, and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE. Or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. We say hello to our listeners in Kansas on KWBW 1450 AM, 98.5 FM. Thank you for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. We're joined now by Stephen Mosier. He is president of the Population Research Institute and author of numerous books, including Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order, that is available now in a re-released paperback edition. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us.
It's good to be with you today.
I want to ask a question to begin that it's a bigger question, I suppose, but why has China not democratized the way that Japan has, South Korea? What are those forces in China that is preventing anything like that from happening?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And the fact of the matter is that under the Republic of China, which was in power in part of China until it lost the Chinese Civil War in 1949, China was moving towards democratization. And that's why we see on Taiwan today a full-fledged democracy, because they continued that democratization process that was put in place in the 20s and 30s under Sun Yat-sen and carried on in the 70s and 80s by Chiang Kai-shek's son, Jiang Jinghua, and resulted now in full-fledged democracy on Taiwan. So, in fact, the Republic of China is a full-fledged democracy now. Unfortunately, it only controls the island of Taiwan with its 24 million people, but they have freedom of speech, assembly, association, they have respect for human rights, and they have regular and free elections. In fact, they are now rated as a better democracy than the United States of America, if you can believe that. they have freer and fairer elections than we do. Now, what happened on the mainland? Well, the Chinese Communist Party is the biggest obstacle to democracy in China, quite intentionally. I mean, it has nothing but disdain for the people of China, which it rules with an iron hand. I mean, we all know that Marxist ideology is a fraud and a fabrication. We all know that it is simply, communism is simply a mechanism for a small elite to seize and hold power forever. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely what it has become in China today. China is arguably moving away from democracy, away from respect for human rights, into the world's first high-tech digital dictatorship of a kind we've never seen before. So China is moving in the wrong direction. Taiwan has joined us in the ranks of the democratic nations.
Stephen, what is the dream that you reference in the subhead in the title, and why is China's acquisition or attempted acquisition of that dream so perilous for the rest of the world?
Well, the China dream, which is a phrase that was popularized by the new Red Emperor Xi Jinping, Chairman Xi, he's the chairman of everything, they call him in China. Quietly, you don't say that out loud or you'll get in trouble. But he's the head of the military commission, so he runs People's Liberation Army. He's the head of government, and he's also the head of the Chinese Communist Party. So all roads lead to Xi. And Xi's idea is not just to reassemble the ancient empire of China, which they've largely done. I mean, China is now sitting on and occupying Tibet. It's occupying Xinjiang, the land that the Uyghurs have been on for several thousand years. It's occupying Manchuria, and it's occupying a large part of Mongolia. So China is an empire that has survived into the modern age. And empires have no natural boundaries. I mean, the boundary of an empire is set by the correlation of forces. And as China gets stronger, it wants to recover more and more. Not only wants to recover its lost territory, and of course we have to say Taiwan, it also wants to expand its borders, because the traditional role of China in the world is encapsulated in its name. It's called in Chinese Zhonghua, which is the kingdom in the middle, the kingdom at the center of the earth. Another way of saying the nation China is in Chinese is Qianxia, which means all under heaven.
Talking with Stephen Mosier, his book is Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. even if we recognize this threat, Stephen, to what extent is the economic entanglements a hurdle to our fight against China? I'm talking about U.S. corporations who are manufacturing goods in China, talking about organizations like the NBA or, you know, Hollywood who needs the China or wants the China market to which to sell its goods and services. How does the economic entanglement complicate matters?
Well, it complicates matters tremendously. And, you know, we have to gradually untangle those relationships. We gradually have to shift our supply chains out of China to our countries that respect our values and institutions. In fact, I would say we have to move the factories to countries that share our values, our democratic values and institutions. And, you know, there is a precedent for doing that because Japan, 2 years ago, set up a fund funded by many billions of dollars to help Japanese companies relocate out of China. And the conditions on which you can receive money to help in that move, if you're a Japanese company, is not that you have to move to Japan. You can move to Taiwan. You can move to Vietnam. You can move to India. You can move to the United States. You can move anywhere, Japan said. Just move out of China, because they realized, Japan, Tokyo realized that they were becoming over-dependent on China, the market, economically, and they needed to diversify both their exports and their imports. Now, what happens if you become over-dependent on the China market is that China will wage unconditional, unconventional economic warfare against you if you cross them.
Stephen Mosher, final question. You write that our policy towards China should be the same as President Ronald Reagan's toward the Soviet Union. We win, they lose. Can we win in the same way the Cold War came to an end without, essentially, a hot war? Can we win without bullets being fired?
Yeah, I think we can. Now, remember that President Reagan did three things that brought down the Soviet Union by intensifying the internal contradictions of the Soviet communist system. Those three things were: he built up a first-rate military, which the Soviet Union could not compete with. He denied cutting-edge science and technology to the Soviet Empire. And thirdly, he denied capital infusions to the Soviet Empire, which, of course, was fundamentally bankrupt in many ways. We need to do the same thing. We need to deny capital to the Chinese Communist Party-run economy in China. And we need to delist Chinese firms from Wall Street, from our stock markets, and we need to make sure that we are not funding, the creation of an economic engine and a military engine that is intended for one purpose, to destroy us. We need to deny science and technology to China, because under the misrule of the corrupt enterprise known as the Chinese Communist Party, there is no rule of law. There is no protection for intellectual property rights. China is not an innovation economy because of that. We are. We need to get very serious about denying cutting-edge science and technology to China, including banning People's Liberation Army military officers from enrolling in graduate studies at American universities, which they do by presenting a civilian face. So there's a lot we can do in that regard. Finally, we have to demand reparations from China for unleashing a pandemic on the world. We should do that in conjunction with our allies. Everybody who's lost a job, everybody who lost a business, everybody who's fallen ill, everyone who's had a relative die or a friend die from COVID, we're all owed reparations in the trillions and trillions of dollars.
Stephen Mosher is the author of Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me. Hillsdale is a great school. I look forward to my next visit.
Up next, we talk with David Diener from Hillsdale's Education Department. He'll introduce us to Neil Postman. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. It's been a while since I've cut a new radio spot, but I feel I need to issue a warning about energy prices during this fall winter of 2021 and 22. Just as Obama said after he was elected, elections have consequences. This winter, our country will suffer some of the consequences of the last election. I'm not a politician, but I am a businessman, and many of the decisions of this current administration will drastically affect energy prices this winter and going forward. Already, we are experiencing record high propane costs and prices. Remember, our motto at Shasta Gas Propane is, our customers are warm friends. We will treat you like friends this winter and do our best to help you through this high price winter. Give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Now is a great time to prepare for this year's upcoming wildfire season. Reading Electric Utility and City of Reading staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our facilities and to the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home, clear debris from your roof and gutters, and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity of power lines, call 530-224-4356. We all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
It's never too late to start at Shasta College. Late start classes and 8-week compressed classes are still available. To learn more about upskilling or reskilling for a current job or career, information is online at shastacollege.edu or call one of our counselors to see how easy it is to get enrolled at 530-242-7650. Shasta College offers in-person, hybrid, and online class options to fit your busy life and responsibilities. Financial aid is available. More at ShastaCollege.edu.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans' issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5, 1460 AM.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for alumni, or friends of Hillsdale, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined now by Dr. David Diener. He is headmaster at Hillsdale Academy, lecturing professor of education at Hillsdale College. Dr. Diener, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to talk today about Neil Postman. And we begin by asking you to tell us, who was Neil Postman? What did he spend his time thinking, writing about? Why do we know him?
Good, yeah. Neil Postman is a really important public intellectual and professor. Passed away in 2003, but for many years was at the New York University, where he founded a graduate program in media ecology. I could explain a little bit about what that is. And he was the chair of the Department of Culture and Communication. He wrote and spoke extensively, specifically about themes related to technology and education, but societal trends and the intersection of those things in general. Maybe just one note about media ecology, what we mean by that. This came out of Marshall McLuhan's work, Postman believed that media and communication never happens in a vacuum. So just like in a ecological environment, say you introduce a new species of frog into the jungle habitat or something, it's not that just that change is not the only change that happens. Rather, there's a domino effect. There's a series of changes that happens, and can actually create quite extensive changes in the ecology that you often can't predict or control once you've made a change. And so his basic starting point is that communication and technology, media works like that as well.
He focused a lot on technology. How would you generally characterize his views on technology?
I think in order to understand Postman's thought, there are two assumptions that you have to have in place in order for this to make sense. And one is the idea that the medium is the message. And he got this, again, from Marshall McLuhan, mm-hmm. who coined that phrase. The idea here is that any communications medium is not just a passive receptacle that transmits the informational content of the communication, of the message, but rather that the medium is part of the message. It restricts or expands or gives possibilities to or fundamentally changes the message. So when we're talking about different communication technologies, we have to think about the way in which those technologies or those mediums, those media, affect the content of the message. So that's one assumption. The other assumption is that fundamentally he rejects the idea that technology is a passive tool. So you can sort of think like Frankenstein here. Mm-hmm. We create something, and then it often behaves in ways that we can't predict or control, like as I said, with an environmental ecology.
Right.
So technologies, we develop them. He doesn't think that intrinsically most technologies are good or bad, but he thinks it's very important that we recognize that once we inject a technology into society, culture, education, etc., that it is going to, as it were, have a life of its own. It's going to move and change and affect us in ways that we can't oftentimes even control. And so we need to be very careful and reflective about that.
In Amusing Ourselves to Death, Postman writes that it's not Orwell's totalitarianism we should be worried about, but Huxley's. What does he mean by that? What do you think he saw in technology and entertainment that perhaps could be so dangerous?
Well, what he sees is that because of the kinds of communication technologies that we have today, or in the 20th century in particular, they lead us to view education as entertainment. They lead us to view public discourse as entertainment, right? So this is why he wrote this book, for example, on how to watch the nightly news, or the subtitle of Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business. As public communication, I think he would say, devolves into a consumerist entertainment, this is very dangerous to education as it's been understood, to constructive civil discourse, etc. And a couple other just thoughts there. One is that entertainment is easy. So if you think about the kind of cognitive processing that's even required to read a text, for example, It's not required of you in the same way to watch TV or to look at something on the internet. And so, in a sense, he thinks that there are the technologies are stultifying our minds, right? The things that we care most about are actually quite difficult. So, being, you know, for example, a good husband or father, being a good mother or wife, being a good parent, being a good contributing member of society, listening to an hour-long lecture, becoming a person of virtue and wisdom, contributing to civil society, right? being a person of deep faith, growing in one's in one's faith and religious commitments. All of these things are very difficult things that take years and years to do. While on the other hand, watching television is easy. Posting things on social media is easy. He sort of sarcastically notes at one point that watching TV is so easy that in the history of television, no one has developed a TV watching disability, right? There is no such thing. He says, like this doesn't take any skills at all, and you don't get better at it by doing more of it.
Talking with Dr. David Diener about Neil Postman, you mentioned his book, Technopoly. Could you define that term as Postman meant it? And does Postman think America is a technopoly?
So, yes, he does. And he talks about in this book, Technopoly, about how technology has come to be deified. We treat it as a god. But what he means by that is it is an unquestioned good. So, for example, the question, you don't have to make an argument in a technopoly for why a piece of technology that's faster or stores more, you know, data or has fewer wires is better. These are just assumed goods. And the problem there is that what we do is we trade off technical questions of how or of efficiency for meaningful metaphysical questions. So we assume that that having more information is better, for example. And he says that we should strongly question that assumption. If you look at the deep problems that we face, right? He says from starvation to divorce to mental health issues to, you know, social problems. These problems are not a matter of lack of information. They are a lack of how we use the information we have in a prudent way. And so what he thinks that we have come to have around us is information glut. We have so much information because of our sort of deification of these technologies. We have so much information that we're lost. We don't even know what to do with it. And he says this actually leads to information chaos. It leads to a situation in which we are so awash with the information that we are disoriented, culture breaks down, meta-narratives break down, our ability to engage meaningfully in the information that we have is actually, ironically, diminished by the quantity of information to which we have access.
Talking with Dr. David Diener about Neil Postman, I imagine there is a well of critique out there that essentially says, well, Postman, he's a Luddite, doesn't like technology, doesn't want to use technology. Is there any kernel of truth in that critique?
Well, it's a pretty strong statement to say there's no kernel of truth, but I don't think he was a Luddite. I don't think that he despised or fought against technology per se. What he thought was of supreme importance is that we recognize the effect that technology is having on us, that we recognize that these are not passive tools, and then that we think critically about the ways that technologies are shaping our lives, our culture, our education system, and then be willing to, you know, make decisions accordingly, to ask, do we like the ways that these technologies that we've, you know, infused into our society are changing us and are changing education and culture. So no, he was not against technology per se. He himself used all kinds of technologies. But he would say that it is imperative that we think carefully about it, and if we don't, we will be swept along passively to destinations that may be not at all to our liking.
Dr. David Diener, headmaster at Hillsdale Academy and lecturing professor of education at Hillsdale College. Dr. Diener, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Molly Hemingway, Senior Journalism Fellow here at Hillsdale College, Fox News contributor and Federalist Editor-in-Chief. We talk with Stephen Mosier, author of Bully of Asia, and David Diener from Hillsdale's Education Department on Neil Postman. You can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, and now iHeart. Search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Email us, radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the show is Nate Esbinshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
When it comes to best breakfast, you know Black Bear Diner is the place to be. But have you considered feeding your dinner bear there? Nothing says comfort like slow-cooked pot roast, house-made meatloaf, or a tender, breaded chicken fried steak. These dinners will take you back to the best home cooking comfort you know. Serve daily at Black Bear Diner at 2605 Hilltop Drive.
Black Bear Diner.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to a North State with no more homeless pets.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith.
Father Rinaldi's foundation is located in Shasta and is the remains of a Catholic church that was never built. Father Rinaldi was a Catholic priest who was sent to Shasta in 1855. He had big dreams, and he was determined to build a church that would surpass any other building in the Gold Country. Plans called for a basilica to have the walls of cut stone copied after the architecture of the great Italian Renaissance buildings. He began raising money through donations.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.